This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. An associate of U.S. President Donald Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, charged with campaign finance violations, is having trouble paying his own lawyers. Lev Parnas was represented by two attorneys, but on Tuesday, one of them asked the court to be excused, saying his client couldn't afford them both.
In October, the Ukrainian-born Parnas was charged, along with another man named Igor Fruman, with illegally funneling money to a pro-Trump election committee and to other politicians whom they pressed to get the U.S. ambassador to Kiev removed. And that's not all. Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, has said Parnas and Fruman assisted him in investigating Trump's political rival Joe Biden and Biden's son Hunter, who served on the board of a Ukrainian energy company. That association landed both men squarely in the middle of the impeachment process.
Igor Fruman and Lev Parnas.
Democrats accused Trump of abusing his office to pressure Ukraine to probe the Bidens and remove an ambassador who they thought was an obstacle to their efforts.
That is Reuters' Zachary Goldman reporting. Syrian government troops supported by Russian warplanes advanced on a rebel-held town in the northwestern province of Idlib, according to local officials. The ongoing offensive against the town in southern Idlib has caused a major influx of civilians to safer areas along the Syrian-Turkish border. That's according to a war monitoring group. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which has researchers across the war-torn country, said that following intense fighting in the area, Syrian government forces took control of dozens of villages around the strategic town, killing dozens of people and forcing thousands of local residents to flee their homes. The military escalation has caused dozens of civilian casualties and displaced 80,000 Syrians. This is VOA News. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un had been promising U.S. President Trump a special gift for Christmas. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has more on the ominous threat.
After North Korea's leader warned he would take action if sanctions are not eased by the end of the year, the speculation is that the Christmas gift he's promised the U.S. would likely be a new missile test, perhaps a missile capable of delivering a nuclear warhead. When asked how the U.S. will respond, President Trump said maybe Kim Jong-un is planning a nice present, like a beautiful vase rather than a missile launch. A UN spokesman says the world body has a Christmas message for Pyongyang. It should work for peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula and resume disarmament talks with the United States. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Protesters in Iraq firmly rejected the latest nominee for prime minister, saying all rank-and-file politicians are unacceptable. A pro-Iranian bloc in the parliament has chosen Basra governor Assad al-Idani and handed his name over to the president. The bloc claims it is the largest group in the parliament, which, according to the Constitution, would give it the right to name a new head of government. But the Iraqi Supreme Court has so far declined to say which group has the largest number of seats in parliament because of a number of politicians who have recently switched parties. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had to be rushed off the stage at an election rally in the southern Israeli port city after a rocket was fired from the Gaza Strip late Wednesday. One rocket fired from Gaza intercepted by the Iron Dome missile defense system. Netanyahu and his wife Sarah were taken to a nearby shelter. As rocket sirens sounded, he later returned for his speech. The leaders of China and Japan held a bilateral meeting Wednesday. We get more from Reuters' Emer McCarthy.
Chinese Premier Li Keqiang and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe have vowed to strengthen their relationship at a bilateral meeting in Chengdu on Wednesday. Li said in the meeting that he hoped the relationship between the two countries could get back on track and progress in the future. Abe hopeful ongoing discussions will lead to a visit by Xi. Wednesday's meeting came on the sidelines of a trilateral summit with South Korea, which provided a chance for the leaders of Japan and South Korea to meet for the first time in more than a year and stressed the need to improve ties after the, quote, worst period of tensions between their countries in decades.
That's Reuters' Emer McCarthy reporting. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Paul Alexander in Washington, sitting in for James Buddy. Today is Thursday, December 26th, and while Christmas was yesterday, our show today remains focused on the holiday season, how it can cause concerns in Uganda for the spread of Ebola, how it can lead the Pope to urge African leaders to fight the causes of migration, and hope that South Sudan can find peace. The holiday can also bring together Muslims and Christians in Senegal, but leave the poor in Zimbabwe and South Africa trying to find the spirit of Christmas amid their country's economic woes.
If you look at the prices of the basic commodities, they are so out of reach for many of us. Just imagine for those who are not going out to work and are not getting anything at the end of the month. It actually means they have no Christmas to celebrate about.
That was Munyaradzi Kaundikidza, who was among the shrinking number of people in Zimbabwe who could afford to do some Christmas shopping this year. And we'll have the third part of Darren Taylor's five-part series on China's growing role in Africa, this time focusing on its growing investment in factories on the continent, both the good and the questions.
At that point, at a minimum, very conservatively, there were at least 10,000 Chinese businesses operating in sub-Saharan Africa. About a third of those are manufacturers.
That was Irene Yuan Sun, an expert in China-Africa economic relations. Following a surge in new cases of Ebola in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda's government and the World Health Organization are intensifying precautionary measures just in case the deadly virus jumps the border. They say with Christmas festivities on, there are more chances the disease could easily spread to the country as people reunite for the holidays. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakaringi files this story from Kampala.
Emmanuel Nebiona, Uganda Minister of Health spokesperson, says the country needs to be on alert due to the resurgence of new Ebola cases in neighboring DR Congo.
In December alone, we have realized that there is an increased number of new confirmed Ebola cases in the neighboring DRC. So this one puts Uganda at high risk since we share a border with DRC, and also the fatality rate remains above 60. So the challenge is still in our neighborhood, and we need to be on high alert to ensure that we are able to interrupt any importation of EVD.
There have been at least 50 Ebola cases in DR Congo since the beginning of this month. Overall, 3,351 cases have been reported, with 2,211 deaths since the current outbreak was first reported 17 months ago. Efforts to bring it under control have been hampered by violence in the eastern DRC, where dozens of insurgent groups operate. Uganda's Minister of Health and WHO have stationed Ebola treatment centers, as well as personnel along borders test those entering the country. Dr. Jonas Tegan Odamariam is the head of WHO in Uganda.
WHO is supporting the government to have the capacity to early detect and respond to any potential Ebola outbreak, including getting prepared by vaccinating people who can get exposed, like frontline health workers, which we have been close to 1,000 health workers and contacts.
Ebola virus disease, or EVD, is a hemorrhagic fever that is transmitted by direct contact with blood, body fluids, and tissues of infected persons.
As you know, the two countries are very much culturally, economically linked, so we expect people to cross for visiting their families and so forth. So we are making sure that the health facilities in the border areas are aware of, and they have to keep their eyes open.
Three people died of Ebola virus in Uganda in August, including a five-year-old who had come to visit his relatives from DR Congo. The United States government is among those funding activities aimed at preventing the disease from spreading across the region. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
In his Christmas message to Rome and to the world, Pope Francis had special thoughts for people forced to migrate due to injustices and for children who are abandoned and suffer violence. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome that the Pope also sent a special Christmas message to the leaders of South Sudan.
In his traditional Urbi et Orbi Christmas blessing and message from the central balcony of St. Peter's Basilica, the Pope said his thoughts went to the many areas of the world where there is darkness due to economic, geopolitical and ecological conflicts, but said the light of Christ is greater. Pope Francis spoke of the many children suffering from wars and conflicts in the Middle East and mentioned Syria, Lebanon and Iraq. He spoke of the people of Africa, where persistent social and political situations often force individuals to migrate, depriving them of a home and family. He said it is injustice that makes them cross deserts and seas that become cemeteries. It is injustice that forces them to endure unspeakable forms of abuse, enslavement of every kind, and torture in inhumane detention camps. And the Pope added, it is injustice that turns them away from places where they might have hoped for a dignified life, but instead find themselves before walls of indifference. Today, the Pope also sent special wishes for peace and prosperity to the leaders of South Sudan. The joint Christmas message with Anglican Archbishop Justin Welby and the Reverend John Chalmers, former moderator of the Church of Scotland, assured South Sudanese leaders of their spiritual closeness as they strive for a swift implementation of the peace agreements reached for their country. In his Christmas message, Pope Francis also had thoughts for the Venezuelan people, long beleaguered by their political and social tensions, and Ukraine, which yearns for concrete solutions for an enduring peace. Nativitas, Domini nostri Jesu Christi. Last night at the start of Christmas Eve Mass, the birth of Jesus Christ was announced to the congregation. Pope Francis said, the grace of God bringing salvation to all has shone on our world tonight. He also had a message of unconditional love. Christmas reminds us that God continues to love us all, even the worst of us.
Natale ci ricorda che Dio continua ad amare ogni uomo.
The Pope said, you may have mistaken ideas, you may have made a complete mess of things, but the Lord continues to love you. Pope Francis will again be appearing for the crowds in St. Peter's Square on Thursday and Sunday, and then will celebrate Vespers and the Te Deum in St. Peter's Basilica in thanksgiving for the past year on December 31st. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Paul Alexander in Washington, and today is Thursday, December 26th. Senegal, home to the largest mosque in West Africa and with a 95% Muslim population, is widely recognized for its strict adherence to Islam. And yet, each year at Christmas, streets and city squares are aglow with holiday lights and storefronts filled with tinsel and Christmas trees. So how do the Senegalese people reconcile their devotion to Islam with their love of the Christian holiday? Annika Hammerschlag reports from Dakar.
Street vendors carrying skullcaps and prayer beads weave in and out of traffic in Dakar's busy Sendega market. It's a typical weekday in this Muslim-majority country where taxi drivers often pull over to pray on the sidewalk, and mosques can be found just about everywhere, even on the beach. But in December, Senegal's vendors also peddle shimmering tinsel, metal ornaments, and plastic Christmas trees. Diaga Gai sells Christmas trees for between 20 to 50 U.S. dollars, depending on the size. He says he typically sells two per day. He says it's mostly Muslims who buy the trees because Senegal is a secular country. Everyone is the same, says Guy. Christians participate in Muslim holidays, and Muslims do the same during Christian holidays, he says. But it's mostly Muslims who buy the trees, says Guy. This time of year, Christmas decorations light up Dakar's city squares and storefronts. At La Parisienne Bakery, snowflakes are glued to the windows and nutcrackers adorn countertops. Business director Abi Boudad says his customers love the decorations. Senegal's Christians also celebrate Muslim holidays, such as Eid al-Adha, the festival of the sacrifice, known as Tabaski, says Dad.
Senegal is a country like
These days, Christians celebrate Tabaski, and our Christian brothers stand with us by celebrating it with us, he says. So it is normal for us Muslims to try to stand with Christians, to celebrate Christmas with them, says Dad. We are a united people. We are all the same, he says. There is no difference. Certainly, each respects the other in his difference and in his religion, adds Dad. At restaurant Patisserie des Ambassades, the servers wear Santa Claus hats and aprons. Outside, Abdou Diop is dressed in a Santa Claus suit and sitting on a sleigh. Behind him, a horse-drawn cart rolls along the street. It's 80 degrees and sunny, but Diop says the heavy costume and beard don't bother him. When he was little, he says his parents would take him to sit on Santa's lap, a fond memory. He says it demonstrates the social inclusion that's so prevalent in their country. They're united, they're one, says Diop. When Muslims celebrate their holidays, the Christians participate and vice versa, he says. It shows the social cohesion and the strength of Senegal, says Diop. While Muslim Senegal's Christmas is limited to the commercial and secular, it is still a celebration of the Christian holiday and the unity of this West African nation. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar.
Meanwhile, Zimbabweans headed into the Christmas holiday facing one of the worst economies in years. Frequent power cuts, lines for petrol, a months-long doctor strike, soaring inflation, and cash shortages made it hard to be festive. Columbus Mavunga reports from the capital, Harare.
Christmas shoppers at Harare's most affluent shops are doing their best to be merry. But with the economy in a deep slump and high inflation eating up people's savings, festivity is in short supply like fuel and electricity. One of the shoppers is Munyaradzi Kaundi Kidza.
2019 festive season, I think, is just one of the most difficult seasons that I've ever experienced. If you look at the prices of the basic commodities, they are so out of reach for many of us. We can afford to buy this, of course, because we are people who are earning something. But just imagine for those who are not going out to work and are not getting anything at the end of the month. It actually means they have no Christmas to celebrate about.
This can be seen at a Catholic church outside of Harare, where Father Fidelity Mukonori presides over the last Mass before Christmas. Those are church members Liza Musa and Cuthbert Mutasa giving their wishes for this festive season. They say they want the collapsing economy and hunger ravaging Zimbabwe to end. Father Mukonori says he is not surprised by such prayers as the country experiences its worst Christmas in decades and the poor become poorer.
The festive mood is lukewarm. Go inside the shop and look at the issues. Many things have no price. Those which are given the prices are changed every day. That is not a life to live of a people. We have to sit down and talk. That's the purpose of leadership. If you don't, then you are not a leader. You cannot be a national leader with a dead conscience by not listening or understanding what your citizens go through and continue to stick to issues as if it's another day that goes forth.
Zimbabwean authorities say they are doing their best to improve the economy and the holiday for the majority Christian nation. Here is Monica Mchangwa, Zimbabwe's information minister.
We know we've gone through very difficult times as a nation, but the government has been working very flat out to make sure that we put safety nets, especially for our poorest. We've seen actually prices of mealy coming down. We've seen prices, government doing everything possible to make sure that at least our people can have a good Christmas. What government wants is to see their people happy and government is leaving no stone unturned.
But with 30% of the population food insecure and more than 5 million people receiving food aid, according to the United Nations, it would be hard for many people in Zimbabwe to have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
And it's not been an easy year in South Africa either. Power blackouts, a ratings downgrade, historically high unemployment, the inklings of a recession, and a waning demand for grand pianos. Any way you look at it, South Africa's economy ends this year on a sour note. From the big issues to the not so big, VOA's Anita Powell takes a look at how South Africa's economy fared in 2019 and at predictions for the year ahead.
Got a nice bass.
Steve Flavin can trace the decline of South Africa's economy in grand pianos. In 2016, he sold 50 of them in his job as general manager of Lovemore Music Center in Johannesburg. This year, he sold a mere 28. And that, he says, is all the proof he needs that South Africans are girding for tough times ahead.
Whilst we have not seen the growth and trade in certain areas of our business, others have certainly blossomed and proven to be mainstays of the monthly turnover. Smaller entry to the piano market items, smaller piano keyboards that are a base for learning piano, we've sold over 100 this year.
Flavin is describing a well-known economic theory that when consumers are staring down recession, they shy away from high-end goods in favor of cheaper alternatives. He says it's his way of confirming the warnings coming from South African economists like Iraj Abedian, who heads Pan-African Investment and Research Services.
Already in the last quarter of this year, the economy or the GDP contracted, which means if we contract another quarter, the quarter that we are in now, we will be technically in recession. And that is not good for anything, for South Africa's global brand, for its economic investment opportunities, and very importantly, not good for its global credit worthiness, which is already on the brink of being junk graded.
In 2019, South Africa's unemployment hit a record high of 29%, and the state-owned power utility struggled to keep the lights on, implementing rolling blackouts that affected homes and businesses across the country. Add to that a November investment downgrade that cited the nation's sluggish growth and high deficits, and you have the kind of situation that keeps economists up at night. Martin Davis, Managing Director of Emerging Markets in Africa at Deloitte, says the situation can improve, but only if the government changes the way it runs the economy.
The economy is in a funk, and we need to have reform to drive through renewed growth. I think state enterprises, reform of state enterprises, clearing of corruption, where it comes to is better governance required. And this would ultimately result in an injection of confidence, much-needed confidence, in the private sector, something that's been lacking for quite a long time here in South Africa.
But Flavin, the piano salesman, refuses to let this story end on a sour note. He says his plan for 2020 is to reduce Lovemore's stock of high-end items and focus on the entry-level and middle range. That, he hopes, will keep the sweet sound of music and business playing. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
China has cemented its position as most African countries' biggest economic and political partner. It's a complex and nuanced relationship. So this week, we're presenting a series of reports by VOA's Darren Taylor in Johannesburg. Today, we look at the growing number of Chinese-owned companies opening factories on the continent, making everything from cutlery to cars. A leading authority on China's economic influence says Chinese-driven manufacturing is heralding a new dawn of poverty-busting industrialization in Africa. But critics fear China wants to plunder the continent's assets and resources.
Workers set machines to crush rocks at a cement factory in rural South Africa. The owner moved here from China several years ago.
Costs have been rising in China, labor costs, energy costs. And so factories are looking for locations overseas with lower costs. And one of those locations that Chinese industry has looked at is Africa.
Irene Yuen Sun is an expert in China-Africa economic relations at the Center for Global Development in Washington, D.C. While working for the McKinsey International Consulting Company, Sun led the most definitive study yet into Chinese business in Africa.
At that point, at a minimum, very conservatively, there were at least 10,000 Chinese businesses operating in sub-Saharan Africa. About a third of those are manufacturers. That's the biggest group. You get 15 to 20% chunks Chinese businesses that are in services, in trade, import-export, and in construction.
Massive blue and green computerized machines lift multicolored fabric between balloon-sized balls of white polyester at a pillow factory near Johannesburg. Peter Dan is the Chinese owner of this company.
55 million pieces need every year. So it's a huge market. It's only South Africa. And our target is not only South Africa, also include the neighbor countries, Zimbabwe, Botswana. And also in the future, maybe after 3 years, we're going to export to the Europe.
A researcher at South Africa's Institute of Security Studies, Stella Kwasi, says China's production expansion in Africa could spark the industrialization the continent needs, but at a high cost. She points out that some African governments offer incentives, such as subsidies, to Chinese investors.
That's like a pretty easy entry for a Chinese investor who already has the capital. And their government also funds these things. They have access to credit.
She says the African administrations that are so eager to attract Chinese money do little to support domestic entrepreneurs who struggle to get loans. Kwasi adds that even if African business people get funding, they can't compete with the technology that allows the Chinese to produce goods on a much larger scale, and thus more cheaply. She also maintains that relatively few local businesses benefit from China's huge infrastructure projects in Africa.
China literally imports everything. They get contracts to, say, construct roads. All the equipment comes from China. All the cement comes from China.
Kwasi says China essentially exports its surplus steel and cement to Africa. And when its factories producing these materials shut down because of oversupply at home, Beijing relocates them to Africa, where they're able to operate more easily than anywhere else because Africa's labor and environmental laws are weak. Kwasi thinks some African leaders know that China exploits the continent, but may allow it because they stand to benefit.
Chinese do not just come to Africa. Someone gets them in. That's our leadership. That's our governing elite. So what kind of regulations, what kind of leadership do we have?
And some African administrations, she says, see a political benefit from the backing of a great power like China.
Chinese investment and whatever Chinese activity is taking place in Africa entrenches the various forms of government or regime types that we have in Africa. Chinese do not ask questions, and African leaders do not like to be asked questions.
Kwasi urges Africans to look beyond the silver lining of China turning their continent into the world's next factory and to continue asking their governments questions while demanding answers about the costs that this involves. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Burkina Faso's military chief says motorcycle riding Islamist insurgents attacked a military base in the nearby town of Arbenda, leaving more than 120 people dead, including 35 civilians and 85 combatants. The latest major attack in the increasingly volatile Sahel region began early Tuesday morning in northern Soum province. It went on for several hours until the military, backed by air support, forced the militants to flee. The president declared a 48-hour period of national mourning. Defense Minister Sherif Sy says 31 women and 4 men were killed in Arbenda, along with 7 soldiers and 80 of the attackers at the base. That's it for this Thursday, December 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for tuning in and join us tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America as we count down the last days of 2019. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporter Peter Claudi, and our engineers, I'm Paul Alexander in Washington, wishing you will have a very good holiday week.
Hi, my name is Larry London. Tune in on January 3rd at 1500 Universal for an interesting program on border crossings featuring the songs with time in the title. It's the new year, 2020 is here, and we'll be playing songs from Michael Jackson, Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber, all the hits with the word time in the title. See you at 1500 Universal on January 3rd, right here on Border Crossings.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.